This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Well, hello everybody and welcome to another Bristol Confringe. We have a fantasy double act for you today. And both of these writers are signed to Crystal Ink, I believe. Isn't that right, Joe? And you're the editor? So no nepotism going on here at all. But obviously, Joe has perfect taste, and therefore they're both going to be wonderful readers for us. And the first person that we're going to have up is Mr. Joel Corner.
Do you want me to do like a little intro of what the book is about, etc.? Hello, I am Joel Corner. I am an author and journalist and accidental political comedian. I started a Twitter account called The Milliverse, which is the alternate timeline where Ed Miliband became Prime Minister and everyone's annoyed at how boring it is. It's got 5,715 followers now at time of recording. It's a lot more than me. So it is... So I'm going to be reading from The Sky Slayer, which is my book about pirates on the high seas. It is about a boy who wanted to become a hero, and when it happened, it all went horribly, horribly wrong. He has a kind of prison escape at the start of the book and goes out on a quest to break a curse because part of his attempt to become a hero was killing this giant monster called the Air King, and that has cursed him. And so he spends his whole adventure trying to break said curse. It's kind of the way it's sort of structured is kind of, if you think Blake Seven, but in a fantasy world with pirates, regular pirates rather than space pirates. I know some of you may be thinking that's a downgrade, but I don't care. So I'm going to be reading from a chapter called Dreams of the Sea, which comes quite a way into the book, but it's a really, I think it's quite a nice scene. That encapsulates kind of the heart of the book. Let me see where I was starting from. Ah, here we go. They came to a clearing encircling a single fig tree. Its branches were spread in extensive patterns, reaching in every direction. There were puddles of clear water streaked beyond the reaches of the tree's shadow, leaves resting on top and gliding in the reflected sky. Gorm strode ahead and bent under the lowest branches and put her palm against the bough. The tree creaked and swayed, small Trasati birds twittering and squawking overhead. "This tree has known time," Gorm said at long last. "Ages of time. It has known hurts at the hands of humans, Andraigs and Sorai. And yet still it stands, and still it gives breath to the air. Still it gives shade to the traveller." She sat and cupped her hands in her lap. "I suppose this is where we do that meditation thing," Rob said. "We can't waste time," Alia said. "We have supplies to buy." "I'll join you later," Rob snapped. "It's important I find a way of dealing with this curse thing in some sort of way. I'd rather try this stuff on solid ground before we get back on the ship." "So you want me to trade everything on my own?" She smiled grimly. "I trust you know what you're doing." "I do, actually. Better than either of you, apparently." Alia slid away and vanished into the trees, hoisting her pack higher on her back as she went. Gorm crossed her legs as if she was meditating, her hands in her lap. Rob mirrored the motion and breathed slowly as Alia's footsteps became distant and finally faded. "She's having a hard time trusting us," he said after a moment. "I want her on our side, but she won't be as long as she thinks we're about to betray her. She already thinks we did so by making me the captain." "Fear has taken root where once trust bloomed," Gorm said. "I sense, however, that there is much love within her, though she may express it in strange ways. Honesty and caring are indicators of affection more so than embraces or intimacy, maybe." "I suppose," he frowned. "But I can't let her keep insulting the crew and injecting poison into every conversation." "She feels twisted inside," Gorm sounded sad. Hurt and betrayed, lost and alone. These feelings can push us away from those with whom we would be friends. It is a defense we employ when we are in pain, to distance ourselves from the source of anguish. To her, the source is friendship. She pushes us away because she fears being hurt by us. What can I do? To give trust, we must often first receive it. She closed her eyes and breathed deep. We have given you our trust, Captain Sardan. If you show Alia that you trust her, she will, in time, come to trust you in return. Think, perhaps, of what she can do for you, why you would want her on this crew. In a strange way, her being so negative is comforting. Reminds me that I'm not perfect. Do you require reminding of this? Apparently, he laughed. I've done terrible things. By rights, I should have stayed in that prison for the rest of time. But that wouldn't have helped anyone. Alia can help you if you let her. I know, Rob sighed. I think I'm still trying to come to terms with you accepting me as captain. Gorm smiled and reached into her pack, pulling out a pouch. You and I struggle against fear. Are you afraid of the pirate lord Mothar, or of Skagra, his second? No. What do you fear, Captain? He drummed his fingers and met her eyes. I'm afraid of what I've done, of what I could do, of every violent urge in my mind. I became the monster of the mist. I killed, I broke the sea stone sword. Breaking, killing, being a monster, those are the things that I'm capable of. I don't want to be like that, but I know they're hidden inside me. When you were young, you wanted to bring down the oppressors of the world. The Blood King of Hattira, the Pengish Empire, and the Pirate Lord. All of them were doomed in your hands. They hurt people, Bob ground his teeth. I grew up surrounded by bullies who took advantage of weaker people. And when I was little, I wanted to be strong enough to stop them. To have power in order to stop the powerful. Gorm drew a deep breath. That sounds an awful lot like the pirate Skagra, Captain. He stared at her and fidgeted. But I don't want to be powerful, he protested. Not for its own sake. That's the difference. I want to change. I want to be a better person. She wants to be worse. I do not think so, Gorm said and shook her head. What did you learn from her when you spoke? Did she tell you anything of her mind? Not that I recall. Gorm reached down and picked up a stone from the floor. Holding it up, she turned it in her fingers and then tossed it into one of the nearby puddles. It sank with a plunk, and the ripples agitated the surface. Glory is like a circle in the water, she said, but Rob interrupted, which never ceaseth to enlarge itself till by broad spreading it disperses to naught. Yes, I heard. Consider the meaning. The glory dissipates even as it spreads to its greatest length. Great deeds, the names of those who do them, they are lost, but the water seems unchanged. Right? Rob kept his eyes on the water and his brows furrowed. Skagra keeps those words close, almost as close as those speaking of the flame-filled sky. You saw the stone, yes, but you cannot see it now. It is below the surface. It is lost in time. Yet it is still there, imperceptibly, perhaps, to your eyes. That puddle has been changed by its presence. Though the glory passes, the act remains fixed, and it changes all around it, for good or for ill. I think I understand, Rob took a breath. Like the ending of that war of frost and flame. Whoever did it didn't do it for fame. Fame wasn't the point. It was the act itself that changed the world. Every great decision creates ripples in history, Gorm said softly. Like a stone cast into the lake, the ripples merge and rebound in patterns unpredictable until they are gone. Yet every stone changes the lake, though it may not seem to the eye of one on the bank. Gorm breathed slowly and emptied her pouch into her hand. These flowers, she said, when brewed, they can be used for this deep meditation. You dropped them when you fell in the water before. I kept them safe. Would you like to drink? What will it do? That thing you fear, this monstrosity you imagine to be your true self, You must face it. You must look it in the eye and overcome it. You must be the master of your destiny. To know fear, know darkness, and know that you can defeat it. Only then will you be truly immune to the schemes of the pirate lord. She set up a pile of twigs and rubbed them until they caught fire. Rob watched as the flames licked higher. The things inside his head were not mysteries he was eager to explore. He did not want to fight them, he wanted them gone. Gorm pulled a bowl from her pack and filled it with water from her flask. Holding it over the fire, she brought it to a simmer and scattered the leaves in it. The aroma was like perfume, slicked with the musk of mammoths and a hint of fish. He wondered if it was something Lomi had added. What do you think's going to happen? Rob asked skeptically. I've seen real magic, you know. Drugs and hallucinations aren't going to impress me.
It's not about being impressed, she said. I am already impressed, Captain. You risked your life for us many times. Tell me why you did that.
The muscles in his back became rigid as a mountainside. He felt like he could crumble to pieces. The risks he had taken, throwing his body in front of the Pengs to save Van, diving into the water to save the rest of them, and clambering through the cavern to blast a path for the ship. All of it seemed like the acts of a reckless child seeking recognition. But what had been in his mind? Was all the buzzing fear, calamity, and of anxiety that forced him to keep those people alive? Guilt, he said at last. I saved you because I felt guilty. About my old crew, about the people I've hurt. I worry about having a future that's just the same as my past.
We all have a world of our own terrors to face, Gorm nodded. Mine is chained on your ship. Yours is chained in your mind.
If I face it, Rob picked up the bowl of simmering tea and eyed it to hide his struggle. What if it defeats me?
What would you like to happen?
I'd rather die. To become that thing again would kill me. It would kill anything I would recognize as me, leaving a hollow shell to house a creature of violence and destruction.
Melodrama is a strong point of yours, Gorm said sagely.
Very funny. He frowned and lifted the tea to his lips. The taste was different to the smell, so much so that he took several sips to make sure he wasn't imagining it. It reminded him of hot ale spiked with nettles and mint. As he gulped, his throat convulsed, and he kept the drink down and gasped. How long will it take? He asked.
For some, it takes hours, Gorm said. Others, days. For now, we shall meditate and clear our minds of...
The tree vanished, disappearing into the sky with a rush of wind. Gorm's words faded as the air turned red, white, and silver. He tried to call her name, but his throat closed and choked him. Mists clouded and a torrent of screaming vapours that clung to his skin. He flailed and waved his hat to at the stuff, but it closed in again and again. A shape loomed in the mist, a deep shadow that lurched back against the sky. The closer Rob got, the more substance it gained, the mist falling away from its body to reveal a torn tower of black stone. Its walls were fragmented, bridges spiralling from its body in an endless and ending in midair. He skidded to a stop as a precipice gaped before his feet, making his chest tighten. Breathing hard, he twitched back and forth, but nothing else came from the fog. The land beneath the precipice opened, revealing a valley of bones, armour, and a stench of salt. Rob scrambled towards the scene, his hands grappling the loose stones as he clambered, pulling some free. His arms ached, but he made it to the valley. A figure stood in the middle of the carnage. He was tall, broad, and extremely muscular. He was naked except for a tattered remains of a blue coat. He had long, dripping dreadlocks that fell almost to his knees. His dark skin was lined with silver that followed his veins and arteries, creating a crisscross of white on his brown body. The man lifted his head and his eyes glowed silver, mist pouring from his mouth as he snarled. The face was a cracked and dehydrated mess, dried blood snapping into the pores and contours as it moved.
Who are you? Rob asked. What in Razal's name is going on?
I am the Ocean's Eye.
The mouth gaped, the voice ringing through the throat without moving the lips.
I am that which thou wouldst have been.
On his back, the creature wore a sword of stone, its shell pommel rising above his head, while the rectangular guard followed his shoulders. The ocean's eye laughed with a voice like roaring waves, though the body it occupied barely moved. Blackened and bloody teeth hung in a limp mouth, and cold, dead moan came from the throat with each word.
Arman, Jareth, Bran, Ferlan, Hustin, Melon, and Lung.
It listed the names with glee.
Dead by thy hand.
That wasn't me, Rob moved back from the thing that inherited his body double. It was the Air King.
He came because of thee.
The ocean's eye gloated and raised the puppet body's hand. As it followed, or as if following orders, blood from the victims at his feet rose and roped around Rob's feet and hands, shackling him.
You found the sea stone sword. You took it and used it. Thus you called the Air King. Thus you called their deaths.
You are not me, Rob said, struggling against the bonds. You're just some god, some powerless god. Your heart was trapped in a stone sword. What sort of power is that? Am I supposed to be impressed? The ocean's eyes shot forward and slammed his hand into Rob's throat. He lifted him off the ground and they soared over the valley floor. Rocks broke around Rob's body as he was slammed into a wall of the falling tower. Cracking and smouldering ruins rumbled, filling his ears, and his bones shook.
I am the god of water,
the ocean's eye shouted. The face was so close that Rob could see every gap in the skin, every stretched paw, every cracked and bleeding wound.
I am the sea. There is no power that can destroy me.
A spike of rock seemed to do the trick, Rob sneered as the grip tightened. I smashed your sword to pieces. He pushed and the hand fell. Air slammed him and he twisted and rolled onto the dusty valley floor. Above, the ocean's eye hovered, wind making the dreadlocks flutter like a coat. Rob's real coat was stained with blotches of mud, but he brushed them off as he stood to his full height. I am Rob Sardan, he said. I defeated the pirate lord in single combat. I destroyed the mines of Kenna Ironhelm. I sailed the Forbidden Sea. I killed the Air King in the Red Storm, and I broke the Sea Stone Sword. I am not a servant of gods. I will make gods tremble. The ocean's eye screamed in a fury and flew at him, but Rob leapt aside, letting the creature smash the ground to pieces as it landed. The impact sent Rob stumbling, but he steadied and then faced the creature.
Thou art mine,
it leered at him.
Thou desirest to be remembered. Those dreams never left. Those grand deeds thou speaks of are but violence and murder. That is what thou art, Rob Sardan. Thou art a tyrant, thou art a bully, thou art mine own reflection.
The creature spread its arms, and silver light burst from the veins and eyes in a hellish display. Rob fell, horrified beyond measure. His mind was an inferno, erupting with fear. He was this thing. He had not escaped it when he had broken the sea stone sword. If anything, he had truly become the creature that now stalked closer, grinning through a body it did not own. Rob ran. He stretched his legs as far as they would go, and he ran. He kept running, pumping blood into his limbs as he closed his eyes and put his hands over his ringing ears. The laughter of the ocean's eye came, cracking into his skull, piercing like a lance. His lungs closed. His insides were a war of bile and blood. Hate and anger surged, and fear and guilt, and then deep, dark foreboding. Dread, deeper than the abyss, opened in his head. A branch slammed into his forehead, knocking him over. The silver-strewn sky turned blue. The clouds went from red to white, and the roaring laughter was replaced by the hiss of wavering trees and someone's heavy breathing. Kindly, do not do that again, Alia said, leaning over him with a scowl.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.